Trump is being sucked into negotiations with Iran. Iran is strengthening their nuclear sites. Hezbollah is shutting down in Lebanon. Syria wants to be part of the Abraham Accords. And there's more anti-Semitic actions going on U.S. universities. Messianic World Update begins now. Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion and Lamb Ministries. Welcome to another edition of Messianic World Update. Today's date is Friday, April 25 of the year 2025, and here's the news for the week. The U.S. has been meeting with Iranian representatives for the last 2 weeks there in Oman. Steve Witkoff has been representing the United States. And now they've announced that the technical experts are going to start meeting. They were supposed to meet this week, but it got delayed until this Saturday. So this weekend, the technical experts begin to meet. Trump, in making comment about the discussion so far, seems to be speaking very optimistically. He says the talks are moving forward. In fact, he even made the statement to the effect that we're close to an agreement. So what exactly is being discussed? Iran, back here on the 18th, proposed a three-point plan to the U.S. on how to make an agreement with Iran. Phase one, they would stop their enrichment program. Right now they have a bunch of uranium up to the 60% level. They would stop it and limit it to the 3.67% they need only for a civilian program. In exchange, the U.S. would release certain frozen assets belonging to Iran, controlled by the U.S., and allow Iran to sell more oil so they can get some more money going in their economy. Phase two, according to their plan, would allow IAEA inspectors to come into their nuclear sites and to inspect whatever is going on, including maybe even some hidden sites that they had kept back from the inspectors in the past, in exchange for sanction relief. In other words, the new sanctions that Trump has put on Iran would be released so that they could allow them to do more things in their economy. Phase three would stop all enrichment. They would still keep their enrichment equipment, but they would stop enrichment, and they would take all materials they had previously enriched up to 60%. They would move it out of the country, put it in another safe place out of their control. And as a result, the U.S. would then remove all sanctions. So stepping back from this proposal that has been put forth by Iran, that's the centerpiece of discussions. And all it has really done is sucked Trump and the U.S. into a very complex negotiation requiring much discussion before anything actually gets done. And essentially what's taking place is the same stuff that happened back when Obama was negotiating with Iran through the JCPOA. And that took a long time for that to take place. And it goes to a very famous Iranian and Persian negotiating tactic. And it goes something like this. If you want to catch a fish that's hard to catch, all you have to do is keep muddying the waters. And eventually the fish has to come up out of the muddy waters to the surface. And that's when you catch them. And Iranian tactics are the type of where you confuse their negotiating in a conflict negotiation, confuse the issues, make them complex, discuss them back and forth, all the different options. In the meantime, time goes by for Iran to continue doing exactly what they're doing right now, and you have a sense of that you're making progress with them when in fact no progress is being made at all. I would remind everybody about the old agreement that Iran did enter into that when Trump came in the first time that he discontinued. That agreement, the one that negotiated with President Obama, only lasts until October 24th of this year. And then that whole agreement goes away and all constraints on Iran go away from previous negotiations. Now, what compounds this problem is that Iran is on the brink of nukes, And protracted negotiations does not disturb that issue at all. If Iran wants to take their 60% material and process it up to 90% weapons-grade material, the entire load of material they have can simply be done in a matter of 2 weeks. That's according to the IAEA, and they believe that they could build a minimum of 6 bombs, but there's others who speculate it could be even more, up to like 30 of them. And they could continue to process and build enough material to build multiple bombs each month thereafter. It also doesn't deal with their ballistic missile program, in which they've been developing missile technology to carry a nuclear weapon to wherever they want to send it. And essentially, what you got to have, if you're going to have an effective nuclear weapon, you need the material to for the bomb to be built with. You need the missile delivery system to be able to deliver it on target. And then you need the things such as a trigger, some testing programs, and assembly. The testing programs can all be done computerized. You don't have to be setting off devices to test it. And so essentially, Iran is on the brink of being able to assemble and build the trigger and do the testing and supposedly load it onto a deliverable missile very shortly. And in fact, the IAEA has warned that time is getting very close. Now, the president in the past has echoed that. He's echoed the fact that we've got to do something quickly. And in fact, back before the negotiations began, he said, you guys better negotiate quickly or else things are going to happen. We're going to start bombing. Well, Iran got the message and they said, okay, let's talk. So now here we are 2 weeks later and we're approaching the end of April, you know, the window in which that Trump had given them. And we're talking and we're negotiating. And in the same time that's going on, Iran, satellite photos indicate they're strengthening their nuclear sites. They're building a larger perimeter around each one of them. They are building more tunnels and underground facilities, obviously with the idea in mind to be able to hide more material, set up additional enrichment areas so that there's multiple sites you have to go after, expanding their program, not stopping it and not slowing it down. So here you have them saying they have the intent, Iran has the intent to do this proposal, and yet at the same time, the other hand is furiously putting together their program as fast as they possibly can. So what does Israel have to say about this? Well, here we go again. Iran is not going to stop building a bomb. And all of the previous negotiations, the many years the U.S. and other nations have been talking to Iran, it's talk, 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 and at the same time, they still go forward with their program as best they can. This puts Israel in a position of where if something's going to happen, it may be Israel will be forced to take out Iran on their own. It was better if the U.S. participated because the U.S. has the B-2 bombers, the strategic weaponry, to go in and really seriously damage those sites. Israel can go in and damage them and probably take their program back a couple of years, but we're just delaying the inevitable. And it is true that if Israel goes after Iran, then Iran will probably retaliate against Israel. However, if Trump and the U.S. join forces with them, it could open up a much wider conflict. And so that's part of the answer to why is Trump leaning toward negotiations and not the military? Not the military option. Well, we know a couple of things about Donald Trump. One, he doesn't like to start wars. He's always spoken against wars and wants to end them. You hear his progress in talking about Gaza and his progress in talking about Hezbollah and the Houthis and even the Russia-Ukraine war. He wants wars to end. So why would he go and start a whole brand new Middle East war with Iran? He also believes that his sanctions program that he's got against Iran is working. By the way, it is having an effect. Iran is suffering double-digit inflation right now. They lack monies for basic things that the country needs. Their oil sales are extremely diminished. China is still buying oil on the side. Iran has a shadow fleet of tankers that's running around, and that's where they're getting some of their sales from. And Trump has been told by certain advisors here in the U.S. that if you join in with Israel and you hit Iran, that you will be starting an even greater conflagration here in the Middle East. They believe that Iran will then openly attack Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Iraq units that are there, U.S. Forces that are in Syrian bases, as well as attacking Israel. They could light up the entire Middle East from their position. And it would draw in those other nations into the conflict and cause the Persian Gulf to be an entire war zone for them. Iran has developed a set of container ships that the containers have lids that open up and carry missiles, and so that the container ship goes out looking like a civilian ship, and suddenly the containers open up and they launch missiles, and they can shorten the time for a missile, a short-range missile, to go after a target. Those are of particular interest to the U.S. because that's what could put a container ship closer to Diego Garcia, the U.S. base that's down in the southern Indian Ocean where strategic B-2 bombers are at. They don't have a lot of defensive forces there. They're using their geographical separation as part of their defense. But that could be negated by the Iranian Navy coming in and making a suicide mission of sorts to attack Diego Garcia. Obviously, the U.S. doesn't want that to happen. The Iranian Navy has also developed, quote, aircraft carriers. These are smaller ships, but they carry drones. And they can launch a whole host of drones from different locations from sea and to be able to stage an attack with those. So they have different military attack options besides just shooting some missiles out of the Iran proper. They can go around and causing a lot of trouble. Not the least of which is, we do believe there are Iranian cells hidden in the U.S., and they could be given the signal to carry out attacks against U.S. citizens in the United States should there be an expanded war with Israel there. Now, there's no question that the U.S. would retaliate tremendously. It would be a major war in the Middle East to take place. And that's part of the hesitancy for Donald Trump. Does he really want to go that way? Well, the question is whether or not Iran would retaliate if they suddenly got hit very hard, because the other question is if they got hit and they got taken down on their power plants and their oil refineries and their nuclear program, would there be a regime change? Would there be upheaval inside of Iran itself? And some argue that there would, and that might be a way to turn Iran around. In the meantime, it looks like at this moment, with the negotiations underway with the Iranians, that the military option and the big military buildup that we had with the U.S. in the Middle East, it seems like that option has just kind of slid off the table, although they keep repeating it's still on the table. At least one more thing that helps with understanding that is we have a new CENTCOM commander, and he has just now arrived in Israel. He's there for 36 hours. He's in a high-speed briefing to be able to understand what is the grand plan between Israel and the United States with regard to an attack on Iran. There's no question about that. As you know, there's been a massive delivery of military aid and new weapons being transferred to Israel to get ready for Iran. That has already made its way. Not the least of which is the new THAAD area defense system, the big anti-missile defense system they put in. They've actually built a U.S. base inside of an IDF base there east of Dimona. And that is a major step forward that we've never had before. We've had military advisors in Israel. We've had military exercise in Israel, but we've never actually had a base with personnel stationed in Israel proper. We now have over 100 personnel there manning the THAAD systems. The Lebanese government is still acting against Hezbollah. You had heard that last week that Hezbollah leaders have been told to leave, moving out to South America. The Lebanese government and their army are taking over the areas where Hezbollah was at. They're finding weapons caches, capturing weapons, and destroying tunnels, and basically disassembling all of the infrastructure that Hezbollah had built. And that's good progress with regard to that. Israel is planning on withdrawing from southern Lebanon as a result of those actions taking place. In Gaza, there's still fighting going on. The IDF soldiers have been suffering casualties. Many Hamas fighters have also been killed. Hamas, of course, is trying to be a big recruitment program, but they don't have any money to pay their fighters. The money has dried up for them. Aid has been stopped. The aid that had been going on was being stolen by Hamas, going to Hamas. It was really aiding Hamas, not the people. And the citizens were being killed by Hamas if they tried to get to the aid. So now the aid is stopped, and citizens are now increasingly demanding that Hamas leaves Gaza. And in fact, certain Gaza citizens are being spirited out of Gaza. This last week, France helped 100 Palestinians to leave. I've mentioned to you before certain flights coming out of Eilat in Israel, where certain Palestinians are escaping Gaza itself. Most cannot escape Gaza. They have to deal with Hamas and the situation going on there. The IDF operations are still very intense in Gaza, and they're still demanding the hostages. But it seems like that one day to the next, it's basically the same story again and again. Hamas operatives have been arrested up in Samaria, and Abbas, who's the leader of the Palestinian Authority, has finally got fed up with Hamas. This last week, he referred to them as sons of dogs and demanding the war in Gaza to end. I find him making that comment about Hamas, calling them sons of dogs, as really rich, because the Palestinian Fatah fighters that he's had under his control behave the same way Hamas does. Jordan has now outlawed the Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan. The Muslim Brotherhood, by the way, is the organization that Hamas is. Hamas is simply the military wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. So essentially, Jordan has outlawed Hamas ever being in Jordan. So if Hamas operatives were thinking about moving to Jordan, Jordan is saying they're not going to receive them. Syrian leaders are now talking about a peaceful relationship with Israel. The new Syrian rebel leader had made a comment this week that he'd like to explore the Abraham Accords, would like to be a part of that. That made Trump very happy. The problem is that Erdogan of Turkey is moving in and controlling the Syrian area, wants to use Turkey as kind of a proxy for Iran. And Turkey has always had this bent toward Israel to be contentious with them. The concern on part of Israel's part is that the more that the rebels take control of Syria under Turkish control, it'll just be future trouble for Israel. So they're being very cautious about any of these statements about they'd like to have improved relationships with Israel in this matter. The Israel is about to withdraw its forces from southern Syria at the request of the U.S. and at the demand of Erdogan of Turkey. U.S. forces are also being reduced in Syria. These are special ops forces that were in special bases controlling the ISIS outbreaks. And my understanding is that they're going to bring those forces down to less than 600, moving nearly 1,000 of those forces out. So that's the changing landscape for Syria. Here in the United States, we've been seeing news reports going on frequently, and the most recent is the one having to do with Harvard University. Harvard University has not done anything about its systemic anti-Semitic activity. And by systemic anti-Semitic activity, I'm talking about they're doing nothing to block the protests that were for pro-Hamas, anti-Jewish attacks on Jewish students going to Harvard. They didn't do anything about that. The idea of students going in and taking over buildings in Harvard, locking themselves on the gates, all of those protests, the university is basically doing nothing to stop it. They are not expelling students. They're not coming out with a broad program to speak against it. And in fact, the U.S. federal government, in accordance with the agreements with the university for funding, has said you're violating the agreements that you made with the U.S. You're not protecting free speech, First Amendment rights for Jewish students, and you're allowing this illegal activity to take place, and you're sponsoring it, so to speak, on your own university. There's also some 60 different classes that Harvard teaches with its faculty that is completely consistent with anti-Semitic rhetoric. So the federal government has finally come in and said, we're going to stop any monies, federal monies, going to you. Well, instead of responding to that like other universities have done and upgrading their anti-Semitic programs, the Harvard has decided to sue the federal government and saying, you don't have any right to do that to us. So basically, Harvard is now arguing that they have the right to be anti-Semitic if they so choose to do so under the idea of it being a First Amendment right, which is utterly ridiculous. This week was Holocaust Remembrance Week. And in Israel, they had the 2 minutes of silence where the nation came to a standstill to remember the 6 million Jews killed in World War II in what we call the Holocaust. We always made the pledge that we will not forget, we will always remember, but we apparently, this country has already forgotten, and based on the news accounts that we had this week, there was barely a mention of the Holocaust observance this week. And that seems to speak to the nature of what is taking place in our country. We have a lot of liberal elements, and I hate to say it, but in the Democratic Party, they no longer hold to the idea that Jewish citizens in this country should be protected from anti-Jewish activities, and it's considered a hate crime. Part of it has to do with them bringing up the subject of Hitler and who was the perpetrator of the Holocaust, and using him as an example to throw that over the top of what their political opposition is. So that's the reason why Trump's being equated as Hitler, is because they're doing the reverse. They are very guilty of supporting what Hitler supported, yet they accuse their opposition of being Hitler and being fascist. I would suggest to you, if you listen to the rhetoric and you listen to the philosophy of these liberal universities, they are espousing the fascist thinking. They are the ones that are espousing that Jews should be in the world and Israel should not exist. The hypocrisy that's being displayed to them in the matter of free speech and freedom of religion is utterly stunning. And I can't believe I'm seeing this in my lifetime. I remember the days of my youth and learning about the Holocaust that had happened in World War II and how the world was stunned by it so greatly, and that they said that we would never allow that to happen again. And yet here we are, and we have a group of people in our country, our fellow citizens, can't tell the difference between right from wrong, can't tell the difference between good and bad. And more than that, they're putting out a rallying cry to hate. And the anti-Semitic speeches and manner in which they're going at sounds very similar to the same voices that we hear coming out of Tehran in Iran. I don't see much difference between some of the anti-Semitic behavior going on in this country than that which is going on in the streets of Iran. So I have a message to President Trump, and I know he's probably not going to hear me or pay attention to me, but my message to you, President Trump, is you need to stop talking to those people and start taking some of the actions that God has called for. I believe it is the time to tread the grapes of wrath, because the winepress is full. We don't need any more examples from the liars that are controlling the government of Iran about so-called peaceful measures. They only have one program. That program is destroy Israel and destroy the United States. Are you listening to what they say versus the other hand moving and the negotiations? Don't believe the negotiations. It's a front for what they're really doing. We need to continue to pray for our country, for our president, for Israel, and for all that's going on, because the world is full of deception and it's getting worse. Thank you for viewing this program. You can get a free subscription to our Yavo magazine. Just contact the ministry at the website or call into the office. We'd love to send that to you. It has articles each month that you'll find of interest. Also brings you up to speed on other events going on here at Lion and Lamb. On the YouTube channel, hit that like, comment, and subscribe button. We'd love to have you do that and join with all those others that have subscribed to us. And if you want to get our subscription service, which is even a full array of all of our different teaching materials, lionandlamb.tv, check that out. I think you'll find that to be also worth your time. For those of you who like your podcasts, we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts, whether they be on X or Telegram or TikTok or Facebook or Instagram, we're on all of them. And so we're trying to make it as easy as we can for you to get the information out to you. In the meantime, Shabbat Shalom.